space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise.
Well, as Bill Shakespeare wrote, the play's the thing wherein I'll catch the conscience of the king. We're going to be talking about the conscience of the king. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I like this one because I was going to try and find a clever way to work in the phrase, don't blame me, I voted for Kodos.
Yeah.
But I couldn't figure out how to do it. So there it is.
It would just be everyone. You spending the entire episode like waiting for a moment. Yeah. Just, I'm like, Clay's really feeling out of it this time.
I was going to use it here if whatever you said was a lob ball into it, but it wasn't. So I aborted that.
This episode, it's called The Conscience of the King. It was written by Barry Trivers, directed by Gerd Oswald. And it's the episode where an actor traveling aboard the Enterprise may be a former governor who ordered a mass murder 20 years earlier. Me and Clay are going to get right into it. We're going to play an audio clip from the episode, and then we're going to discuss it. See you in a bit.
We're overdue for our talk, aren't we?
I had hoped you would have respected my privacy, Captain.
A moment ago, we narrowly averted an explosion which would have destroyed several decks of the ship. Before that, someone tried to poison one of my crewmen.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm sure you are. Are you Kodos? I asked you a question.
Do you believe that I am?
I do.
Then I am Kodos, if it pleases you to believe so. I'm an actor. I play many parts.
You're an actor now. What were you 20 years ago?
Younger, Captain. Much younger.
Clay, I was a little bit surprised by this episode, and I think my reaction to it. I'm going to start off with a very simple question for you. Is this episode, without telling you any information, is this episode better or worse than I think it is? I feel like
what,
I'm going to have.
What does that even mean?
I feel my opinion of this one can be very manipulated. I intentionally didn't read any reviews about it.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to see if this conversation would shape my opinion on it. I think that I might not be well versed enough in Shakespeare to understand if this is good and I'm missing everything, or if it's really not well written and I'm not missing anything at all.
Wait, so I mean, I didn't read anything about this either, and I don't think I've ever watched this one before. We watched it for this, but are you implying that it's like actually King Lear or something? Like, is it supposed to be written mirroring a Shakespeare play?
Well, I think I talked about it with Amy, and Amy used to be an English teacher, and so she's more familiar with Shakespeare. And I think that it's just a whole bunch of different references to different Shakespeare works.
Yeah.
Obviously Hamlet, and obviously Macbeth in some ways, because he calls the woman Lady Macbeth, and she turns out to be the manipulator behind everything.
Well, that's the play that they're performing at the beginning, too.
Macbeth is, yes, and they're performing Hamlet at the very end.
Yes, yeah.
But I think that my, like, on a level of the episode by itself, I don't think this one's super strong, because I was watching it and just, like, you know, I'll get the obvious thing out of the way. Like, this is an episode that, watching as a modern audience, you really have to just suspend your disbelief about the fact that they can't verify if this is Kodos or not.
Yeah.
So, apparently in the future, the only way to identify someone is to have an eyewitness count from, like, 30 years ago. Someone comes in and looks at them. But getting past that, I just feel that it, like, I don't know. I didn't really like the way that Kirk approached the situation. I wasn't sure about what the Kodos thing.
I couldn't figure out why Kirk was being so sneaky about everything. Why didn't he tell someone what the hell was going on?
Because
the entire episode, he's doing all of this stuff that people are reacting to as being out of character for him, as far as going back and picking up the people and everything. And Spock is like, hey, what the hell are you doing? And he's like, don't worry about it. I'm just being the captain. And, so, and Spock has to figure, like, I don't know. It just didn't. There was nothing about his plan that couldn't – if Spock had said, hey, Jim, what's going on? He said, oh, well, I think this guy is actually a mass murderer who killed the half the population of the planet I used to live on, and I'm just trying to figure it out and make sure that it is, I would feel like Spock would be like, all right, yeah, cool, let's do it.
Right. Right.
Like, there's no downside for him telling Spock what he's doing. And it doesn't – and him not telling Spock doesn't make the episode better.
It doesn't gain him any advantage either.
Yeah.
To it. I totally agree with that. And I think
And also, he just sacrifices that other dude. Just he reassigns Riley, I guess, to put him in a more vulnerable position, yeah, just to test his theory.
They don't even – I don't think they say that in the episode, but I think what they're implying is that Kirk moves him to keep him safe, but he moves him to a place where he's all alone. And anyone can just sneak up and poison him. And it, yeah, I didn't think that was very good. I think that the Shakespeare thing, right, is that they're kind of playing off of Hamlet there, and Hamlet in Shakespeare has a reason to be secretive about what he's doing.
Yes.
Kirk has no reason whatsoever to be secretive about what he's doing. And so it's that kind of a thing where I don't know if the episode is layering Shakespeare properly into a story that actually makes sense in this show.
Yeah, yeah.
Outside of that, the reason that I wanted to watch this episode is because it's the Tarsus or whatever for Kodos thing, which I'm fairly certain is going to be the backdrop for the Discovery show.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's interesting.
So
that's a pretty good, yeah, I could see that being a good element to use.
And yeah, this is based off conjecture, I think, but a lot of people have written pretty convincingly about why this would be the sort of backdrop to that, and I think it makes sense. I could be totally wrong, but we'll see when Discovery comes out. But I think it's interesting in the way, you know, I think that the idea of this mass murdering governor who applied his own personal brand of eugenics, although the show never talks about what that was, which I guess is a good thing going forward. I just thought that the whole thing about him didn't land, and I didn't think anyone's reaction to him was appropriate. Like, Kirk is really pretty rational when he's dealing with Kodos, who would probably have had Kirk's, you know, some people that Kirk knew executed back when he was on the planet.
Yeah.
What'd you think in general about this one, if you have any points to jump off of?
Yeah, I didn't really like this episode. I did like it unless I'm missing one, it being the first in a very long tradition of using Shakespeare on Star Trek for some reason.
Yes, yeah,
I think probably because it's in the public domain. but yeah, like the thing that was really ringing false to me was just the, like, I get the thing that they were trying to go for with the Hamlet thing, with, you know, basically a really loose paraphrasing of Hamlet trying to figure out whether or not his uncle killed his father kind of thing. But there's, like you were saying, Hamlet has a reason to be sneaky, whereas Kirk doesn't. And it gets to a point later in the episode where he has a infallible voice recognition technology, which comes back as confirming that it is Kodos, and the script that he has the guy read, he puts down and reads the second half of without looking at it, because he probably said it when he was doing it for real.
Yep.
And then he's arguing with Kodos, and Kodos, or the actor, who starts speaking in the first person in reference to Kodos. And then Spock tells him straight up, he's like, you know, the logical answer here is that this is the same guy. It's almost absolutely certain. And Kirk is still like, but it's not completely certain. There's no way to know.
When after he talks about the infallible voice recognition, Spock's like, it's a 98% match. And Kirk's like, not good enough.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah. This guy was like, it's like Kirk was a juror in the O.J. Simpson case or something.
I guess that my original thing of, I just really wasn't sure if I was missing something. I spent the entire episode wondering if I was missing what was going on and if this was over my head.
Yeah, I felt the same way. Like, I mean, I, I got the Shakespeare stuff, but I was like, I don't really know if there's something with the plot here that I'm just not catching. But it just, I don't know. It didn't do it for me. And the daughter character was pretty terrible too.
when she talks about Kirk's throbbing engine, leans against the thing. Yeah, the conscience of the king. I guess what's a good track to sort of start off on this one? Well, I guess that here's something we haven't talked about before. The captain's log, right? That starts off every episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of a brilliant idea. I'm sure this isn't the first show to do that kind of like a wrap up or that kind of a table setting at the very start, but it's a clever way to set up the episode for people. This one is weird, and I bring it up because this one is weird because Kirk explains that he's going to this planet because a scientist who's his friend has claimed to discover the key to solving famine. And then it smash cuts to him on the planet going, "I can't believe you tricked me coming here with the false pretense of discovering famine."
Yeah.
But in general, I think that the captain's log thing is like a really clever, great way to immediately focus the audience on what's going on in this show that's always on a different planet with a different person, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. It's a great way to shorthand your way into a fairly high concept situations.
Yeah.
It takes out a lot of – it gets across exposition so you can just sort of get the ball rolling.
Yep.
In a way that's very believable.
Did – when it starts, the first starting bits of this episode, I was kind of reminded of Mad Men because the planet basically looks like the 60s on a different planet.
yes, as most of the planets do.
And he meets his old friend who's apparently had his face half torn off by Kodos, I'm assuming, is what that implication is supposed to be.
Sure.
They reveal that they grew up together on a colony called, I believe it's Tarsus. I can look that up later. It's called Tarsus IV or something, where a governor decided that there wasn't enough food to go around, so he decided to kill off half of the population. And so he killed 4,000 people out of 8,000 total. Kirk and a few others, there were 9 survivors who had actually seen this guy, which is another weird kind of detail. But the cruel twist, of course, is that after he'd killed all these people, the rescue ship showed up like a day later and was like, "Oh, it was totally unnecessary for you to have killed all these people."
Yeah.
And that's the kind of moral twist at that.
Isn't that the way it always goes?
Yeah, though? It's always a day late and a dollar short. You know, I'm glad that if Discovery does this, because I think that story is really interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think this story is particularly interesting. I'm really, my biggest takeaway beyond not knowing if this was going on was, I didn't feel like anyone reacted to Kodos the Executioner appropriately when they were talking to him.
No, that name is pretty awesome.
Yes.
The reactions do not live up to the name. It's like casually introducing your friend Vlad the Impaler.
Yes, yeah.
My thing here was, I didn't care. Like the way that they laid the story out, it was like really oblique references. I don't know if that's the right word to the Tarsus thing, where it kind of took a little bit to really kind of figure out what was going on and why Kirk cared about this.
Yeah.
And then the part where all of the survivors were getting killed off, they don't even drop that factoid till like halfway through the episode.
Right.
If I remember correctly, it seems like it takes a long time to get to that point.
And don't you feel that, like, if you were one of 9 survivors of this mass execution, wouldn't you know if one of the other guys serves on your ship?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, it is a big ship.
Yeah, wouldn't you hang out with that guy all the time instead of being, like, surprised that, he actually works on the Enterprise? That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
I just felt
if you go to high school with somebody and then, or you go to, let's say you go to elementary school with somebody and then you find out that, you're at the same college, but it's like Duke University, so it's really big.
Yeah.
And so, so you're not going to necessarily run into each other, even though you're the president of your student body.
Maybe, but don't you,
perfect metaphor.
if you were raised perfect, like during a mass famine execution thing, yeah. I think you'd probably bond over it.
No, yes, it's fairly unbelievable that they would not be aware of each other.
There's only 9 of them. The other thing that's sort of odd is only 9 people have seen the governor somehow. There's 4,000 survivors, but only 9 of them know what this guy looks like.
Oh, that, well, yeah, that's stupid. Like, I mean, and also Kirk and the other guy are like, we were like really young at the time. I don't even remember what he really looks like.
Right, right.
So I is it like 4,000 survivors, but there's only 9 of them that didn't die from old age or something? I don't know. Is it,
oh,
I don't,
maybe, yeah. These are just the youngest guys. I feel it's wildly unsatisfying in how the episode tries to explain what that's going on. And Kirk's reaction when Kirk confronts Kodos in the locker room. Not the locker room, in the, whatever. That's my fan
fiction. What's up, bro? Nice towel.
When he confronts him.
Why don't you take that towel off and confront me like a man?
I felt that the melodrama really kicked in. Like, they were trying to make the episode turn into a bad version of a Shakespeare play.
Yeah.
Just the way that they're soliloquizing and they're monologuing and not looking at, like, looking off in the camera. And one guy steps to, like, stage front and just sort of talks for a little bit.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, it just didn't mean anything to me. And you also don't know, you know, we learned at the very end that this is indeed Kodos, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was that the right decision? Is the episode better if it's about the ambiguity of never being sure about something?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think once you bring in the assassination plot thing, you kind of have to make a decision.
Yeah.
Because the secondary plot of your episode is that someone, that all of the survivors who know what this guy looks like happen to start being killed every time his theater troupe rolls into their town.
Yeah.
Which is another thing in the stack of evidence that Kirk doesn't seem to want to really think about.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like you have to make some sort of decision. You can't just be like, wow, that was a huge coincidence.
Yeah.
What I would do, honestly, I think there's a simple, simple fix for this episode. You can keep the Shakespeare troupe. You can keep the daughter as being a crazy actress who's just offing people. Just make Kodos some sort of diplomat. Make him don't make him an actor. Make him some sort of authority figure who, where Kirk accusing him of something like this would actually have weight to it. I mean, I feel like that's a really easy fix.
You're right. So just because there's no stakes, because he's such sort of a low on the totem pole guy in this,
yeah,
like the,
like,
yeah,
like if it turns into, let's say it's you know, same setup where it's the actor troupe and then there's Kodos, but Kodos is like either an ambassador or even maybe like a general or some legislative or you know, capacity,
yeah,
government,
yeah,
capacity, and they have to go, as he has to go to point B as part of his ambassadorship. And so then they end up on the Enterprise for the same reasons, because he thinks it's Kodos. And then you have this ambassador on the ship who has, you know, all these diplomatic things and people are really nice to him and everyone, you know, it's X, Y, and Z. But then you've got the Kirk plot where he's like, there's this well-respected person on my ship who I think is a mass murderer, but I can't just come out and say that because that's going to make me look insane.
Sure.
You know, and at that point, him sneaking around makes a lot more sense and it makes it a lot more like Hamlet.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I like have this be going on during some kind of very delicate negotiation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and I mean, you can like still keep the daughter being the assassin thing if you want. I don't really think you even really need that plot line, to be honest with you. I think there's probably, if they had more weight to Kirk's decisions or consequences of his decisions, I think you could probably make that could be the main focus of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it seems like the assassination plot is very tacked on anyway.
Yeah, I don't really understand her motivation for, I guess it's to protect her father, right? These are the only, for some reason, these 9 are the only people who are actively out to get a mass murderer.
Yeah, but they're not even actively out to get him. Like, Kirk wasn't looking for this guy.
Right, yeah, yeah. Riley was not until he learned from McCoy talking loudly in the other room that Kodos was there. I need to talk about Riley in the engineering room for a second. Was he eating Starburst and milk for dinner? Did you notice
it? It looked like he was drinking a tall glass of Kahlua or something.
His meal was like little multicolored cubes of different shapes and sizes. It's very odd.
When your dinner is Starburst and Kahlua, you're either a freshman in college or just like at a real low point in your life.
Kirk sent him down there to protect him, right? Was that your interpretation?
I don't know. I thought that he was using him as like a...
bait?
Yeah.
Oh.
But the only reason that I thought that was because when they restationed him, he was by himself and very vulnerable. So I figured, I guess he's just putting him in perfect, you know, position for someone to sneak up with a Windex bottle and spray something into his drink.
I loved it wasn't a food dropper. It was just a Windex bottle of shit that someone sprays.
It was like
they just
grabbed grabbed one of the cleaning crew from the set and just had him spray something into his glass.
That was very, very silly. And it eventually culminates in Kirk sort of confronting Kodos, and everyone gets very melodramatic. Kodos jumps in front of a phaser blast from his daughter. She kills him. She goes crazy. And then she gets wheeled off thinking that he's still alive and all that stuff. Kirk has a sort of a weird scene where she accuses him of using her, right?
Yeah, that was weird.
That didn't make any sense because Kirk doesn't know who she is when he started flirting with her.
Yeah, and I mean, theoretically, you could say that she was using him.
Right, yes. That's more
accurate. I don't know if she knows who he is.
At that point, maybe.
I mean, I guess she would have to because she's actively killing all of these people. Like, how does this plan even work? Do they have a list of survivors? And like, how would she know to kill the half-face guy?
Yep.
Or how would she know to kill Riley? And then does she doesn't actively, like, there's no attempt on Kirk, right?
It's
just the confrontation at the end.
Yeah, just that.
So I don't even know how the mechanics of her plan actually work.
Why do you think I thought this episode was had the potential to be good, I guess? I was confounded by this episode. And
You mean you thought it had potential before you watched it?
After I'd watched it and I was thinking about it, I walked away from it unimpressed.
Oh, but I see. Okay.
Then I was like, am I just not getting it? And I talked to Modi about this, and I want to talk to you, and a couple people chimed in the comments. Do you find that you have to pay much more attention to TOS episodes than TNG episodes to follow them?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. I haven't really noticed specifically, but I think I think a reason why you might is because it's just one plot.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if you're looking at TNG, if you break the plots apart, you're basically got one plot that's taking up maybe 2/3 of the episode and one plot that's taking up 1/3 of the episode. But since you're just running one straight plot through the whole thing, it's a little bit more, you kind of have to pay more attention to it a little bit, or at least it seems that way. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it kind of does. I feel that I feel like I'll be watching it and I'll go like, why is this happening? Why would they do that? And I'll rewind it for 5 minutes and they'll mention it almost in like throwaway dialogue, what they're doing.
Well, you know, I have a theory about that because, I think it comes across more in Balance of Terror, but I started thinking about it as in terms of when the show was created. And I mean, it's not early television, but it's fairly early television. And I think it's just set up more like a play than we're used to.
Yep.
Because they have a lot of sequences in which they're just talking to each other, which I think generally now is not done as much or as when you get scenes like that now in television shows, it's usually one person talking to another person. But Star Trek, TOS seems to routinely have scenes where there's like five people at a table all just having like a dialogue scene.
Well, I think that modern direction does a better job of showing you what's important to pay attention to. Like, yes, they'll close up on the person saying the key piece of information.
Yeah,
TOS does not do that, which is... We're going to get to Balance of Terror. Like, Balance of Terror, I think, works much better because it's more cinematic in a way. Yeah. And this, like, the Conscience of the King is much more of a TV episode than it is a movie type idea.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the direction is really good at following the important beats for you at this point. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because, you know, I thought the best stuff in this episode was the Spock and Kirk stuff.
Yes. I like the Spock and Bones scene, too, where they're drinking.
Yes. Yeah, that one, too. And I think, you know, that kind of illustrates my point where it's – or I think both of our points where the general visual representation in this episode is not particularly good. But when you get two characters together that have just really strong – dialogue written for them and they play it well, it's like oh that's what this is about,
right?
Like the Kirk and Spock scene was like, oh, okay, I get this, I understand this now, I understand why Kirk is, I mean, I still don't understand why he's being sneaky about it, but I understand more of his motivations. And
yeah,
you know, Spock is trying to reason. That stuff came across a lot better than stuff that was just, you know, more visual or just plot moving forward.
Yeah a bunch of people talking to each other and stuff like that. Huh, interesting. Lady Macbeth, huh? Oh, it's all about the machinations of Lady Macbeth. I think we're done talking about this one.
I do want to point out, unless they've done it before, is this the first time they mentioned the Star Service?
Oh, is that what they call Starfleet?
Yeah, I think they do it in Balance of Terror as well, but they reference Star Service.
Yeah, it's
sounds more like a catering company.
I was trying to sort of follow along in terms of like the first mentions. TOS's airing order and production order makes this like very complicated to understand when they first do things.
Right.
I was actually unable, since we're going into Balance of Terror, I was unable to find out what the first episode that Vulcans were mentioned in, because
interesting.
I don't think he mentioned it. In this episode, he mentions it in Balance of Terror, but before that, he's just mentioned it as my father's race.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll see. We'll get to that when we get to it. But
I wonder, do you... I mean, I don't know why you would know this, but I'm sure somewhere someone can explain why that was the case back then, why it was... The production order was... Is it just a matter of it being... It's episodic, so there's no need to put it in a particular order. So they're just doing whichever ones are finished or whichever ones look better or something.
I know the reason for it. So they had the two pilots, right?
Yeah.
The second pilot was aired third in order, so they just didn't want to do it right away. They aired Mantrap first because they thought that it was the most action-y episode that they had, and they wanted to hook people. Corbomite, which was the first produced episode, the Corbomite Maneuver, aired 10th or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And the reason for that was because it had so much post-production that they weren't able to finish it.
That makes sense.
So I think it's a lot of just a combination of the networks wanting to hook people with action-y episodes and how much work it took to complete the episode.
Yeah, because we ran into the same thing with The Prisoner.
Yes.
Because the production schedule for The Prisoner is completely different than the airing schedule of The Prisoner, and since then,
airing orders as well.
Yeah, and since then there's multiple airing orders and airing orders preferred by the people who are fans of the show, so I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, and I guess that's the I think that airing order had more of an impact on The Prisoner than it does on the Star Trek.
Yeah, I think so too.
The worst that Star Trek does is it's like, oh, this makeup looks more primitive, and the episode came after, so I don't understand why that was happening.
Yeah, The Prisoner has a hard in and a hard out,
right?
In an overarching kind of mystery framing device, so it has different bearings on things. However, possibly minutely. Depending on how you view it.
But right.
It is a little bit different because Star Trek doesn't really have that.
Right. Yep, exactly.
Unless you're just waiting for the 5-year mission to be over.
One other point that I haven't mentioned yet. The opening theme song and the Space the Final Frontier dialogue. Patrick Stewart crushes that Shatner's version I am really not very impressed with.
Yeah.
I don't think that's saying anything much, but the Next Generation enunciation of that whole phrasing is many, 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 many times better than the original series.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because after, I think, Wrath of Khan, I think Wrath of Khan is the first one to end with Spock doing it.
Sure.
And I feel like Spock becomes the go-to for that over Kirk after that point, because he does it again in I know he does it in the Abrams remake, and I think he might do it one or two other times across the movies. And I always found that really interesting, that it's such a Kirk thing. I mean, it's so recognizable as Kirk's thing.
Yeah,
but it at somewhere along the way turned into Spock's thing.
It's all that internal strife between these two characters.
Which was, yeah, probably the whole plan of Leonard Nimoy is for Star Trek to turn into Spock's thing.
Did you have anything else you wanted to bring up about Conscience of the King? Any of your notes that struck you as kind of odd? I wrote that I liked Spock and Bones drinking. I really enjoyed that.
I think my favorite scene was there was a Spock, Kirk, and McCoy scene. That it was another, they're all kind of sitting around talking about stuff. And that was a really good use of the three of them as, you know, Kirk being gut feeling, Spock being more logic, and Bones being, you know, even more gut feeling,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I thought that they have a really good handle on how those guys interact. I am constantly surprised watching this how good those guys actually are together, because
yeah.
I guess I kind of saw them as someone who didn't really watch the show that much but knew what their relationship was supposed to be from the movies.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of thought that, oh, maybe their great relationship the great writing for their relationship is more like, you know, rose-colored glasses looking back on the series, but They actually handle those guys really well. They know what they're doing with them, and all three of them work really well together.
Yeah, so and I think that, like, I watch a lot of these original series episodes now, sort of going through it. It's a little bit surprising how much my preconception of what I think the show is and how they interact with each other is compared to the reality of it.
Yep.
And I think that this is very early, and you don't have to go one way or the other, but do you think you have a preference for TOS's hyper focus on only a few characters versus TNG's wider cast, or what do you think is more? I guess what do you think is better for like producing the show or producing a show? I know that they're two totally different shows, but any sort of general thoughts about it?
I think. TNG allows you more options. Having all of those characters as well defined as they eventually get, I think, allows you to do a lot of different stuff. Whereas, as great as the Spock and Kirk and McCoy relationship is, it's kind of the same thing every time.
Yeah.
And unless it's, you know, Spock throwing, you know, it's usually Spock is the one who's being like, well, actually, I agree with McCoy, to kind of throw a bit of a twist into it, which is always satisfying, but it's still kind of the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I find Kirk to be a much more interesting character than I thought I would. So that's nice, but I think just overall, yeah, I think the TNG model allows you more opportunity to tell different kinds of stories.
Yeah, I think we're going to get into it. I think TNG's a way of working the cast is better for a TV show, and TOS's characters are going to make for better movies.
Yeah,
because
I would agree with
they're
that.
Built for that. And I agree with you that the id, ego, and super ego that they represent is you're kind of stuck. Like, the only thing you can change is the sort of moral dilemma that they're looking at, and then
yes,
they're all going to come
yeah.
to the same conclusion about it no matter what.
Right.
And based on the outcome, Kirk is the ego, and they're sort of, maybe he's the super ego. He's the decider. He's the sort of modulator between the other two.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Let's go to final thoughts and ratings for Conscience of the King.
You'll never get off the ship.
It will become a floating tomb.
drifting through space. The soul of the great Caridian giving performances to every star he touches.
I know how to use this, Captain.
No!
Caesar, beware the Ides of March.
No, child, no! Oh!
All right, Clay, you've convinced me. It's a 5 out of 5, a classic, beautiful episode.
Mission accomplished.
I think it's a... guys, also, if you're on YouTube and you don't know, you can rate what you think on our scale of 1 to 5 by clicking up the upper right-hand corner of the video, and a 1 to 5 poll will pop up. Let us know what you think this episode deserves. I'm going to give it a 2, I think. What do you think before I go any further with where I stand there?
I'm going to give this 2 overpowered phaser bombs.
Beep, 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 beep. Oh, this is the episode where he throws it down the garbage chute, right?
Yeah. I don't know why that helped.
We need to talk about that. They evacuate an entire deck because of this thing, and he finds it. It was like, oh, he's going to disarm it. That'll be easy. He runs out into the hallway and throws it down a dumpster chute, which I assume goes to somewhere else on the ship.
Yeah, you would think
so. It would blow up, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like the time when I was a kid, I accidentally lit a cherry bomb in my kitchen, so I just threw it down the sink. Yeah. And it seemed fine. They were doing construction on the pipes for about 3 weeks outside my house, but inside the house it was fine.
I'm gonna give this one a 2. I guess I understand what they were trying to do with it. It really doesn't work. I don't understand anybody's motivation. I think that the underlying sort of conflict of what happened on Tarsus 4 is more interesting than anything else.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they don't give too much information because you can expand on that idea.
Would you find it more interesting if Kirk flat out did know and it was more like he was just trying to gather proof?
I think that makes more sense in terms of narrative, right? I find it very hard to believe that, you know, future technology aside, they can't be sure that this is the same guy.
Yeah, I guess that's where the wrench comes in regardless. Because, I mean, even if Kirk knew for a fact, but he couldn't find the evidence, that means they would have to have some reason why this guy was not in any... you know, memory bank,
right,
or his voice was different enough that the infallible voice recognition software didn't pick it up. I mean, it's possible. I mean, I've used the Dragon speech software and it is not great.
Yeah, I mean, Alexa plays me the wrong song countless times when I ask for what's going on. I think I agree with that. What are you going to give this guy out of a 5?
I'll give it a 2.
Not great.
It's not terrible, but it's just, I don't know, I find it fairly forgettable.
Yes, I would agree. And the reason it came up on the list is I think I just wanted to talk about Discovery's potential as it stands.
I'm glad. I mean, that'll be cool if that's what it is. I mean, I like it when they call back to this stuff. I mean, I think Wrath of Khan might be the greatest callback in the history of callbacks.
Right, yep.
Especially... I don't know if you haven't done Space Seed yet, have you?
Nope. That's later on.
Okay.
We'll be getting to Mr.
Clearly,
Mr. Khan.
Clearly I listened to the show.
Anyway, that's it, guys. Thank you for listening to us talk about Conscience of the King. If you're on YouTube, like in the comments, appreciate it. If you're on iTunes or any of the other podcatching software, why don't you give us a rating there? We'd much appreciate it. You can go to facebook.com/thepenskypodcast, patreon.com/thepenskypodcast.
I would also like to say, before anyone gives me shit about listening or not listening to the show, apparently Brent Spiner has never watched an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, I saw that
so
on his,
sit
his
on that.
Blu-ray. And it was funny. He seemed a little bit peeved that think people would kind of expect him to watch an episode, which I can understand. And I also can't really understand that at the same time.
Yeah, you'd think you'd watch at least one.
Right, just to see.
Or, you know.
Spiner never directed anything.
So
that maybe that's why he's not particularly interested in it. But yeah, go to patreon.com/thepenskypodcast if you want to give a couple dollars to support the show. It's greatly appreciated. You gotta support the podcast that you listen to. I think it's a very important thing to do.
We talked about RoboCop for the entire runtime of the movie.
It's not like a...
And we didn't even cover everything.
No, I actually rewatched it, and I have much more to say about it, and we'll be doing that in the sequels. We're going to get RoboCop 2 and 3. But you can check that out.
I completely forgot to point out that the RoboCop car is the most affordable and easy movie prop car that you can get, because it's just a shitty 1987 Ford Taurus.
Painted in matte black.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, check that out. Otherwise, vote on what you think this episode is. You can send me an email at thepenskyfilevideo@gmail.com if you'd rather do that. Follow me on Twitter, @thatpenskyfile. I think that's it. We're going to be moving on to Balance of Terror, which is actually the next episode after this one. So, Clay, thank you for coming on.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
And guys, we'll see you next time.